This is Wells Tech, a weekly show exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. Your hosts are Sally Draper and Martin Spriggs. Wells Tech is produced by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Episode 503, recorded on Wednesday, June 27th, 2017. You've joined a show about technology and ministry, and we talk about where those two intersect. And at my side, each and every episode, or at least for many, Sally Draper. Hey, Sally.
Good morning, Martin. Happy to be joining you. We're a day late and a dollar short, maybe, but we've got good excuses. You have a have married off your youngest, I understand.
Married them all off, yeah. Had a wonderful service and a great reception, and they're off honeymooning now in Georgia someplace.
They rented Very nice.
Breakfast. We did gift opening yesterday, so my daughter Yana is no longer Yana Spriggs, but Yana Sitzman. So,
well, congratulations. Yeah, what a blessing.
Super happy for them.
So. Yeah. And my kids, even though they married a week before Yana, they're off honeymooning at Mount Rushmore. So got all kinds of honeymooning going on around here. Good stuff.
We had a Monday wedding. They were hoping to get some people where they worked to be able to attend, because the restaurant that they worked at, both of them worked at the same restaurant, was closed on Monday. So that's why it was a Monday wedding. It didn't hurt the pocketbook either as much. So Mondays are actually a good choice. So. But we had a great time. So
wonderful.
We're going to have a great time here on episode 503, Sally, because we are continuing our series on ministry resources, where we take some time to focus on maybe one tool, one application, one website, one something that would be worthy of spending some time talking about in the context of ministry resources. We do that every week. We have a ministry resource, but we thought we'd put a little more energy behind it over this summer series. So I am up this week, and the ministry resource that I wanted to talk about is a Apple product, and one product in particular, and that's the iPad. I have to admit that up until maybe even a couple weeks ago, I didn't use the iPad a lot. I've had one, I don't know if I had the original one, but I've had two over the last, what has it been, around 8 years, 7 years, something mm-hmm. like that. So I had the original and felt that it was useful to a point. I don't know that I would say it was kind of the be-all, end-all for a ministry resource until Apple had an event a few weeks back and they launched a new device. And they've actually had iPad Pros around for a while, but they offered a new form factor, which I think is kind of a nice fit for people in ministry context. So that's really what the ministry resource is all about, how I feel that this new iPad Pro 10.5 inch is maybe a nice sweet spot for a lot of people trying to take advantage of technology in ministry. And I outlined a number of reasons why I felt that way. First of all, the form factor, this 10.5 inch, which is just slightly bigger, than the 9.7, but it feels like you've got a little bit more room to stretch your legs out. And with the new upcoming release of iOS 11, they have an improved split view and being able to drag and drop things. And there are different functionalities that I think are making more and more sense that this might enable this device to be maybe a laptop replacement even. It's got great battery life. I mentioned in the article screen quality. They've increased the refresh rate. And if you're not familiar with refresh rates, anytime you're looking at a screen, you're looking at just a series of pictures being flashed very quickly in front of your eyes. So most monitors are at 30 megahertz. That's why when you take a picture of your screen, you get flicker, or when you do video, because the refresh rates don't match. So they can't, they're not in sync. That's why you have some problems. So what iPads had been doing, and then one of the reasons that they maybe even look clearer than your regular TV monitor or even your computer monitor, is that they were at 60 megahertz. So that's pretty quick. But what this new laptop has done is bump that up to 120 megahertz. So they've doubled the refresh rate. What that really means for the visuals or for your eyes is that it looks very, very smooth. So I think it's a lot easier to look at and performs a lot better as well. So those are two of the big ones. There are three others that I mentioned that make this new iPad kind of appealing. One of them is file management. That's one of the reasons I haven't necessarily recommended iPads for ministry, because you really were stuck with the apps that you had and how they managed files. Now with the new release of iOS 11, along with these newer iPads, is you have more traditional file management. So you can do some organization, some tagging, store things in folders, those kinds of things. And it just kind of acts in a lot more friendlier fashion to maybe knowledge workers who need to manage files. And this app called Files in the new iOS is, I think, going to fill that gap. And then two other reasons. One is a keyboard that is available for the iPad Pro in particular. And I even typed up this blog post using that keyboard. Very lappable. I mean, it's easy to put on your lap. The keys feel nice. I wouldn't say it's a full-on keyboard, but because of the extra dimension to this newer iPad model, it almost feels, Sal, you've probably typed on some of these ones that are a little bit small and you can get used to them. This one is a little bit bigger than that, and it feels better than a lot of these smaller Bluetooth keyboards that come along, made by Logitech and those. You just have to get used to them, but I think this one feels a lot better from the start. And then finally, maybe the biggest, one of the biggest benefits of this iPad is just the apps that are now available, the pro apps that are available for iPads, and those would include the entire Office suite. So if you like Outlook, Word, OneNote, PowerPoint, those all work really well, and there are some graphic apps coming out and things that really take advantage of the horsepower that's in this new iPad. So those were some of the things that I liked about the hardware itself and some of the things that you can do with the new hardware. And I've talked about some applications for tablets before, and I kind of talked through them again in the blog post. I think there is application or audience for this tablet or other tablets, but specifically this tablet. I think sermon prep and delivery are kind of naturals. I had an experience with our home pastor who had his laptop kind of propped up on the lectern. And we have a pretty high lectern. So there were times where you could hardly see him behind the screen that was up in front of him. The iPad kind of solves that. You can lay that flat like a piece of paper and manipulate it. I think that kind of removes that little barrier, and it looks a little bit more professional if you're preaching from a presentation, for instance, or even if you use a mind map or whatever, just having it flat like a piece of paper, I think, is a benefit. I think there's benefits for pastors using these kinds of computing devices in Bible class. If nothing more than just having the ability to quickly search the Bible, have that right at your fingertips. I know when I was doing Bible study, there would be a passage that I kind of have in the back of my mind. You know, I know there's a passage that applies to this question or the point I'm trying to make, but I can't find the exact reference or don't remember, the full verse. It's pretty easy to punch that in and a search term in and bring that up in the course of a discussion, on an iPad. I think there are applications for teachers as well. Obviously, the ability to wirelessly move around the classroom and be able to manipulate a presentation or navigate websites you've got things set up to do it that way. And just the iOS ecosystem is another big application here for education. And we've talked about that in the past. We had a whole series of that at our Wells Tech conference where we had a couple of presenters talk about the many different iOS applications that are nice fits for the educational space, if not necessarily for the student, those for the teacher and the visuals that can be provided and those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And the last point I made in the blog post was just the note-taking capabilities is a big win, whether you do it by the keyboard or whether you use a pencil, the Apple Pencil or whatever. It just makes a good place to store all your stuff that you'll always have access to because the iPad is something that you can carry around, similar to a bullet journal, something that goes with you wherever you go, and then all the note-taking tools that are out there. The one I use is OneNote, but you have Apple Notes, that's getting better, Evernote, Google Keep, they all work on these iPads really well. So long and the short of it is I think it's worth paying attention to and seeing if this might be a productivity tool, a ministry tool that would work in your particular scenario. So that is kind of the end-to-end on my iPads for ministry resources this week.
Well, that was quite interesting for me. I guess right away I was just kind of surprised that this was your pick because I know you've been a Surface Pro guy and different tools that you've used in the past, but excited to hear that you're liking the iPad. And I guess one question I have, Martin, is when I go over to the Apple site and look at iPad Pro, I see that there's a 10.5-inch display and a 12.9. Is it that the 10.5 is newer, or did you?
They both were refreshed, so okay. They're both are at the same level. They both have similar functionality. I've not tried the bigger one. And plus it's more expensive, but the bigger one just seemed a little awkward to me. I mean, I picked it up in the store and played with it a little bit, but it's a monster, you know, and it's not something that maybe I would want to carry around. The 10.5 is very close to the 9.7, which was the first iPad that was released. So that form factor works well and is kind of a notebook size. The other one, I'd almost call something that you'd leave on your desk where you mm-hmm. wouldn't carry around quite as much. It's just not as portable as the 10.5. So you get the best of both worlds in that smaller form factor and the powers there. You sacrifice a little screen real estate, obviously, going to the 10.5 versus the 12-incher, but you have and I think those people that maybe would be desirous of the larger screen do maybe more split screen or multitasking. And I'm really I only multitask when I have to and kind of enjoy that one app experience, full screen one app experience. So I think that probably speaks more to the 10.5 for me at least. So your mileage may vary.
Okay. I had to smile as you were discussing it because you actually did a little Freudian slip there and called it your laptop right. rather than your tablet or whatever, because that's what you're really thinking of. I'm actually kind of in the beginning stages of evaluating what kind of computing device I want to switch to for my personal use. I've had a desktop. Eek, I think it's approaching 10 years old for my personal use. And honestly, I'm more of a cloud girl than I ever was right. before. So there's maybe only a few dangling things that I actually use the desktop for. And maybe this is the direction I want to go. I read an article recently about you still need a laptop, even though these things function. And I think it's just kind of a transition that we're going through right now. And, you know, is this a laptop substitute? I guess more and more it is becoming that.
I think a couple experiences I had over the past week as I was trying to kind of live in the iPad world, there were just a couple things that weren't available that I had to kind of do workarounds for. One was when I wrote this blog post, I used the WordPress app, which is nice. It's clean, seemed very stable, and it was able to hook it up to our WordPress site, which is our Wells Tech site. there were a couple of things that you couldn't do in the app because the app makers didn't support it. Things like adding, we have this feature image, you know, for our blog post, and there was no functionality to add a feature image. Styles were a little bit limited. So it was great at input entry, and, you know, I could basically write the whole app, or write the whole blog post article. I could even add a picture, so that wasn't a problem. But when I got down to kind of finishing touches, I had to actually go to, now I didn't have to leave the iPad, but I had to go to the web-based version of WordPress, of our install, to finish the job. So there was a, I'd call that kind of a workaround. That's kind of a limitation more of the app ecosystem than it is, you know, the iPad itself. Because so many of the apps we use, Sally, are web-based. Mm-hmm. They do work, you know, just as well on Safari or Chrome in an iPad than it does on a laptop or a desktop machine. So that was one workaround. And there were a couple others, and I'll talk about those in my my picks of the week. But I'd say those that do image editing are going to find some apps that they're going to like on iPads or on iOS. That was one of the things that was a problem, I think, earlier on, and maybe even as soon as last year. A program that I'm hearing a lot about that's kind of a Photoshop replacement is called Affinity, Affinity, that is about $20, I want to say, but getting really high marks is kind of could be your iPad image editor of choice. And you've got, obviously, web-based image editors, depending on your... Mm-hmm. on your needs, you know, like PicMonkey and those kinds of things. So.
Sure. So it's interesting, Martin, that you mentioned bullet journaling, because we've talked about paper bullet journals with Pastor Steve Daly most recently. I came across a Facebook group not long ago called Digital Bullet Journals. If you search Digital Bullet Journals, you'll be able to ask to join the group. But this is a group of people that are basically doing bullet journaling using iPad apps, and they tell you which ones are good. They recommend something called GoodNotes as one that a lot of people are using, but there's all kinds of creativity out there around doing digital bullet journals. And so maybe with the iPad Pro, I could go digital with my bullet journaling and have the best of both worlds. We'll see. Yet to be determined what kind of hardware I buy for the next chapter of my personal computing.
Yeah, I did a lot of research on specifically OneNote as a replacement for kind of the paper journal, and there are absolutely ways to do it. I haven't kind of dipped too far into that pool yet, although I'm very intrigued by it. I think I mentioned that on a show, you know, a while back, that was mm-hmm. If I were to do bullet journaling, I think I would probably do it that way
digitally.
I got all my other stuff in OneNote, and OneNote apps are really awesome these days. If you haven't tried them on any device, on your iPhone or Android or iPad or even on your desktop or laptop, they have tried to make them look and act very similarly, and they've done a nice job, and they sync across all, and they're just kind of a catch-all. So I'm a big fan of OneNote.
All right,
I mentioned picks of the week, so without further ado, why don't we run to that segment, Sally? What's your pick this week?
Well, my pick this week is a site that I was familiar with for images, but not for this new purpose. So I'm going to try sharing my screen. Let's see if it works. How about that? I think you're seeing it, right?
Yep.
And the site is called Pexels, P-E-X-E-L-S, take off on pixels, obviously, but Pexels. And at videos.pexels.com, you're going to find completely free stock videos. So these are licensed under Creative Commons. There's no attribution required or anything. And they have quite a collection of stock videos. And you just download them. You can use them as backgrounds or filler in video projects that you're taping. There's obviously audio on them. You could erase the audio if you wanted. They're available for modification, whatever you want. So I have the video license here on screen. They have a video that walks you through it, but it's the Creative Commons Zero, free for personal commercial use, attribution is not required. And here's a couple of example videos. This one, just some trees and the sunlight kind of glimmering through the trees would make great background imagery for something you're working on. Here's a pretty sunset video where the sun goes down behind the tree line and the darkness approaches, and even some reflecting water if you're looking for something kind of reflective in your background. So those are just a few examples. I was really impressed with the quantity of videos available from Pexels, and I think you will be too. And as we use more and more video communication, it's nice to add this tool to our tool belt so we can get some stock video for free.
So two questions. It looked like those were all videos hosted on Vimeo. Is that your sense?
Yeah, that's what it appears to be, that they're using Vimeo for their hosting.
Okay, good, good. Mm-hmm. And do these videos, are they made in such a way that they will do looping so that you could just kind of keep these going at? You mentioned using them as a background. One of the obviously things that you'd have to do would be to not just play 8 seconds of video, but you'd have to loop it somehow. I realize probably some of these videos aren't conducive to that, like a sunset. It's only going to set once. Mm-hmm. But the water scenes and those kinds of things. Did you take a little deeper look at those?
Well, you know, Martin, I was thinking of it more as a download that I would then bring into my own video editing software, and then I would do the looping there, you know, within my own video. I don't think the intention was for you to like embed the Vimeo video or something like that. Right, it's right, more of the download, and then you use it and mm-hmm. loop your final production however you want to do that. So right. Okay. I think that would definitely loop depending on what software you're using.
Right. So what software do you use for video editing?
Most of the time it's Camtasia Studio. That's what we use here at work, and mm-hmm. and I'm used to it. It's pretty simple, the timelines and the ability to split audio and video. You can cut things easily, you know, fade in, fade out, do call outs, all kinds of capabilities in Camtasia. That's a TechSmith product.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, cool. Yeah.
Speaking of video, that actually is something that would be very applicable to my pick, and that is something I have picked before, and it came up this weekend as I was creating some assets for my daughter's wedding. I was going to do kind of a Animoto style slideshow, as mm-hmm. you see it in a lot of weddings. So I did that this year as well. I did that for some other occasions as well. So I used Animoto, which is not my pick, although it certainly could be, because it did a nice job where you just upload photos and apply some background audio to it, which is what I did. But then you publish it, and I wanted to keep this on the iPad, as I mentioned before, and I was having trouble finding a player that would auto loop it for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to start the video and just have it play all night, which is ultimately what I got it to do. But the built-in applications, the video playing applications that were playing this MP4, mm-hmm. I think was the format, didn't give me the controls that I wanted. So what I did is I turned to my friend WLC, or WLC Media Player from Videoland, and I've talked about VLC. I've talked about them before, but they are really just an application that'll play almost anything. You can throw any kind of video format, MOV files, MP4 files. I think it'll even play QuickTime files. I mean, it's kind of the multi-use jackknife video resource of choice for a lot of different people for a lot of different reasons. I also use VLC a lot when we're doing post-production for WellsTech, because I want to pull the audio out of our video file. We record this using Google Hangouts. I download the Google Hangouts file, and then I need a tool that'll take the audio for the audio piece, the MP3 piece, that we publish on iTunes and so on and so forth in the RSS feed. And VLC is the thing that does that for me. It's a free product. It comes on almost every platform. It comes on Windows, Mac, Android, what else here? Linux, iOS, of course, which is what I used to do the playback for this. It's really easy to use. It has many more features than what I'm listing here, but it's probably something that anybody who works with any kind of video, whether you want to playback or other things, trim things, it has a full-featured editing interface, and VLC is really the open-source cross-platform player of choice. So that would be my pick.
So Martin, I got to jump in here and tell you my video stories because, you know, we had a wedding too, and I actually used Animoto to do my slideshow, and I wanted it to loop and play the whole time during the reception, projected up on the wall, and what we ended up doing was using an old crusty laptop and playing the MP4 in Windows Media Player, and there is a looping option there, but the rest of the story is the service was actually videotaped and we got a copy on DVD, and I wanted to get the DVD files, you know, in a place where I could share it with my family and things like that. And ultimately I needed to get it to my husband. I don't know. I think laptops these days don't come with DVD players, and there were just a million little challenges we were working through. And I ended up putting it on Google Drive, all the files from this DVD, so that he could get access. And I headed over to Google Photos to look for something, and it had sucked in those video files, and they played in Google Photos, the .vod or whatever. Yeah. So Google Photos is pretty smart. It took my DVD files and brought them into Google Photos. I thought that was pretty cool. Ultimately, I put them on YouTube and my family was able to watch there and stuff. But all kinds of fun video stories from weddings, it seems.
Yeah, we took similar path. I had this photo collection project. Mm-hmm. I had to get photos from my son-in-law, or future son-in-law at the time's family, so they get the photos. So I could have probably put together a whole collage of tools that I used. I used Google Photos scan, I think, on my phone to capture
the
physical pictures. There were a bunch of those that I digitized. And then I, too, uploaded them to Google Photos and made an album, and then let Jana and John pick the ones or kick out the ones they didn't want. and then I pulled those down again and put them into Animoto, and then I uploaded Animoto to Google Drive so that they'd have access to it as well. And then the final piece was recording the service, which I did from my phone. Before I walked my daughter down the aisle, I clicked the Facebook Live button and sent that to relatives who couldn't be there, and that records an HD recording that I downloaded from Facebook, and now I got to figure out where I'm going to put that as well.
So I made one mistake on that part, and I didn't actually set it in the back of the church and turn it on beforehand. I was on the front row, so about halfway through I thought my family could see this and it could be real subtle. So I actually held my phone and turned it on, but I streamed it in Messenger.
Oh.
There's a way to stream, and guess what? That doesn't save the file.
Oh, no.
So I do not have that copy of the, it just streamed. And I did that during the reception when they were doing the toast and things. Right. And I don't have that video. So that was a disappointment. Don't use the Messenger streaming.
Yeah, but when you use Facebook Live, you have a choice once you're done with the video to publish it. And then it stores it in your.
Okay.
Yeah. One tip. It comes in, even though I was holding I had mounted my iPhone in horizontal or landscape position to get kind of the wide angle and hit the publish button. When you bring it into an editing tool, I was using Adobe Premiere to kind of trim stuff off and whatever. It comes in as a vertical video.
Oh. So
the video is on its side, basically. So it's in a vertical orientation. So I had to use the tool tools in Adobe Premiere to actually turn it into horizontal. So it must be something with Facebook Live, how Facebook Live records it, that they assume that you're recording it in a vertical format rather than a horizontal. So that was a minor inconvenience, but it would require some editing if you want to take the video down and then do something with it after that. So
sure.
I was very pleased with how it came out. I used the Shure microphone to get a little bit better, you know, audio, because they were a little bit further. We were probably halfway back in the church where I put the camera out of the way. So fun stuff. We took similar routes.
I guess so.
Live and learn. I don't have any more kids to apply this to, but you do. So
that's right. One coming up in August, as a matter of fact.
We'll do this one right.
Yeah, exactly.
Good stuff. Let's jump. Blathered on long enough. I think it's all tech and ministry stuff. So we do have some community feedback we should probably run through quickly.
We do. And the first thing I wanted to talk through was a post I read recently. It was one of those posts when it comes up, you think, I should follow this conversation. This is going to be good. And this was a post from the Wells Google Schools community. Apparently, James Karlofsky got this question, and he shared it with the group to get everyone's input. It was from Jeremiah Drews, who's principal at St. Mark in Lincoln, Nebraska. And long story short, they're looking to dive into one-to-one computing, perhaps Chromebooks and tablets for lower elementary and all those kind of things. And he's just kind of like, where do I start? And some great feedback from some of our tech and education stars. Rachel Pearson chimed in and said, make sure you have network connectivity that is robust enough to handle all this additional load, or you're going to be greatly disappointed, basically. You know, I think many of us have been there where we don't have enough Wi-Fi to go around for all the new devices we're adding. So that's definitely a priority. Gail kind of took a step back. Gail Potratz chimed into the conversation, and she encouraged him to get together a group and get more of a mission and a vision. What are they trying to accomplish? And, you know, why is technology going to be valuable? She shared some great blog posts, 10 fundamental reasons for technology in education, and why and how to use computers in the classroom. Both really great resources I was quite impressed with. So if you're at that point of getting started, those might be good reads for you as well. And then finally, Drew Willems chimed in and said, after you accomplish all the things that Rachel and Gail recommended, you're going to want to find a really trusted vendor that you can work with and that'll help you through the process. And he pointed out the ShopWells program and partnership with Troxel. And, you know, whether it's Troxel or not, that's up to you, you know, but we definitely have a great partnership with Troxel, and they're in the business of supporting schools with one-to-one implementation. So some really great feedback from all different perspectives, and I think everyone in Jeremiah's position would benefit from taking that advice.
Cool.
Yeah, and coupled with that, just one quick read that I came across this week from Education Week, and it's from ISTE Conference, which is happening this week down in San Antonio, Texas. 3 shifts in the use of ed tech, exploring, personalizing, and closing equity gaps. So one of their keynoters, the CEO of ISTE, told the gathering there that they should move away from just delivering content to exploring and working with content. So students as makers and creators and things like that. The one size fits all is moving to personalized education. So using technology to customize the students' learning paths. And then finally, closing the equity gap. So more and more people have access to technology in education. So just some of those key points, and again, fitting into that conversation around why have technology in the classroom at all. And so lots of good stuff floating out there.
Good deal.
Mm-hmm.
I received an email that I thought was worth sharing as well. This was from Pastor Emil Burgess. He had heard our conversation about Church 360 members, which is a Concordia product. We talked about church management systems, and I had been doing some work with that with my church to see if it fit our needs. And he responded, and I'll just quickly read this. Nice to hear pieces considering Church 360 members. At Trinity, we switched over at the beginning of 2016. Thought I'd share a couple of things I figured out playing with it. As you mentioned on the show, we also created a tag called Prospect. Since it's a tag I referenced often, I added a zero in front of the name so it filtered to the top of the drop-down menu. Makes sense. Mm-hmm. We categorized or tagged each prospect as hot, warm, or cold. It says, let me know if you want to see the breakdown of what defines each. When I went through the hot and warm tags, regularly, I sometimes noticed recently added prospects missing, which meant I had forgotten to categorize them. Instead of scrolling through the whole list, tag zero prospects, looking for missing tags, I created a saved filter tag called uncategorized prospects. I also added a zero in front of that for quick access, and I checked it first thing each time I went through the hot and warm tags. It's simply a filter recipe, but may not be self-evident for people just starting out. So great advice for people. And this probably, I would guess, does not necessarily apply just to the members product, but to most prospect management systems where you do have to categorize prospects in different ways, and you want to make sure you've got ways to clean the data up if you've failed to be as diligent as maybe you should have been. So thanks for the tip, Emil. Really appreciate that.
Definitely. So I think that's going to wrap up our community feedback for this week, which means it's time for our featured video of the week. And it does tie in a bit to our conversation we had earlier because it is a video about bullet journaling. Looks like they've come out with something new on the Bullet Journal YouTube channel, and this is Ask the Bullet Journalist. So it's a Q&A episode that was recently released, and maybe it's going to answer some questions you might have about bullet journaling. So if you want to learn more, it's only about 7.5 minutes long, but perhaps they're going to answer questions that you need. So
I'll give
check
you
it
a
out.
Chance to ask questions as well. So
true.
A great resource for those of you into or just getting into bullet journaling.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Sally, that's going to about do it for this week and our ministry-focused show. We'll be doing that again next week, and you are on deck. Any ideas what you'll be talking about?
I think it'll be 4th of July oriented. No, I'm kidding. We'll be doing it again next Wednesday because Tuesday's a holiday. Yeah. And I think I'm going to take a look at QR codes. QR codes have been around for a while. I think in our past, we even had a QR code challenge on Wells Tech many years ago. So they're those crazy looking square codes, and we'll talk about how you can create them, but more importantly, how you can use them for ministry. And I think there are some applications. So tune in for that.
To it. Good. If you'd like to look at our show notes page to kind of grab the links that we've talked about or explore a little bit more about some of the topics that we did, go to wellstech.wells.net. If you'd like to contribute to the show, you can do it there. Just post a comment on any of the particular shows that you're interested in. We do have an email address, wellstech@wells.net. That gets used fairly frequently. Or you can participate in any of the social medias that we are a part of, and they're all listed there across the top of the page, Google+, Facebook, Twitter, Digo, Pinterest. We have a list server, a Google group that you can join. We mentioned that in the community feedback section as well. So you have opportunities to not only get more information, but also to be a part of the show. And we'd love to have you do that. So thanks again for joining us for our ministry resource focused series this summer, episode 503. Come back and enjoy 504 and bring a friend. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.